Time to take a look at climate and weather with our weather guys, Steve Ackerman, professor and director of the Cooperative Institute for Meteorological Satellite Studies at UW-Madison, and John Martin, professor and chair of the Department of Atmospheric and Oceanic Sciences at the UW-Madison. Always fun to have these guys come by. They usually come by. Well, let's see. Wait, let me turn your microphone on. Yeah, there you go.
It's a subtle signal. Yeah, right.
Maybe he's not happy we're here on Tuesday.
Yeah, you're supposed to be on the last Monday of the month, and here it is, not Monday. It's
the first Tuesday of the month.
Yeah. It's the first Tuesday of the month. Well, that's okay.
You guys are busy raising all the money for.
Yeah, well, that's exactly
going.
Right. We were raising some money, and so we moved you a day.
We don't want to interfere with that.
No, I'm glad you're here, and let me give the phone number. Maybe you've got a climate and weather question, and if you do, I hope you'll join in. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Or you can email us at talk@WPR.org. And I guess the first thing we should do right away is get a snow update from John.
What a day. You know, I have to confess, I've been sort of squirreled away doing other things in my office the last few weeks. But when I came home last night and I heard there was 14 inches of snow in Milwaukee, I thought, that is just unbelievable. I guess the thing is that they don't often get bands of lake effect snow in Milwaukee. That's a relative rarity, and it requires the right kind of fetch across the lake, the wind direction, and also some local dynamics that kind of make the snow banded. But what an amazing day. 14 inches of snow. I heard that it snowed heavily in downtown, and it hardly did anything in Brookfield. It's that narrow.
Yeah, I'd heard it. I mean, if you look at the radar imagery, there's definitely a very narrow part
of
it. But it counts because it hit the airport.
So that's right. It's an official 14-plus inches. Biggest snow they've ever had in Milwaukee.
So you had a record winter breaking, unlike some people predicted.
Yeah. Well, no, they haven't broken any record. They broke a single-day record,
not a
season, yeah. And that's safe in the bank. Now, my money's looking really good on that.
Just for if you haven't been paying attention on the last Monday of the month, John Martin said there will not be a record snowfall this year, as was predicted by another publication.
Yes, the Farmer's Almanac.
Right, which
is heresy.
And you predicted this back in September.
I did. I stood out on a limb there. But it's not out on a limb. I'll say it again. I mean, two straight years of all-time record things, that never happens.
Yeah,
that
never happens. And it ain't going to happen this year.
It doesn't look like it. It doesn't look like it.
Not given today's date.
I hope not, because if it really happened, we would be covered with one heck of a lot of snow.
Yeah, that's true. And just think of how I'd feel. With you guys ganging up on me about that.
we need snowshoes to get to the radio station in order to catch up.
I think we would.
Oh, boy. Sue in Waupaca's online. Let's go to Sue. Hi, Sue. Thanks for calling.
Good morning. I recently emailed one of you, and I was trying to get some information about some lowest highs in the month of January or late December. And I recall this happening, the late 90s. And I combed the internet, could not find any information. That I went to, you know, the Wisconsin websites, the National Weather Service websites, couldn't find anything on that. So that's my first question. Second question, I'm looking for, like, trivia, information about the months and the weather. And I found a great website on St. Louis weather, but nothing about Wisconsin weather. Where can I go?
So I think I remember your email now because I think I tried to forward you off to John
to get the unsuccessfully. Right?
But if you could email me again, steve@ssec.wisc.edu, I can put you in connection with the person that can provide you that data with regard to lowest highs and stuff like that. The science, there are a couple of climate weenies in our building, as long with the state climatology office. And they're usually pretty responsive to public's interest.
Yeah, and that's a funny one, too. I mean, you'd think it would be something to be on that people keep track of in a chat somewhere, but it's not. It's actually something you have to do a little bit of digging to figure out what it is. But Steve's right. There's more than enough people in our building who do that kind of thing almost on a routine basis. I think I've stumbled across this same St. Louis weather trivia site because on one day in my class, I was kind of caught short. I didn't bring my usual weather and history thing, and so I went to the web just before class, and all I could find was St. Louis. So I don't know the answer to that about Wisconsin weather, except that Ed Hopkins and Morgan up in Green Bay wrote a book about Wisconsin weather, and I wonder if you wouldn't be able to find a lot of interesting stories and trivia issues in that book. I think it's called Wisconsin Weather, isn't that right?
It is, but I don't think it's they do have a lot of interesting analysis and data and trivia, weather type trivia, even though it's not trivial.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know if they have it by day. And is that what you're looking for, Sue?
Not necessarily. Oh, okay. I just wanted a synopsis of what we could expect, for instance, for the month of March, and now what we could expect for the month of April, you know, the extremes or mm-hmm. the reason for the winds or such things.
Yeah. Their book, Wisconsin Weather, may actually serve that need.
Mm-hmm.
Very good.
It's a nice, easy-to-read book.
Too. Yeah.
It's pretty cheap.
I will look for it.
I just went online and wrote in Ed Hopkins' book on weather, and it popped right up.
Yeah. Excellent.
Very
it's
good.
And it's focused on Wisconsin. It's got some interesting things about the geography of Wisconsin as well.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. All right.
Thank you much.
Thanks, Sue. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Let's go to Dave in Madison. Dave, hello.
Hi. On regards to that first caller you just had, the Wisconsin State Journal publishes once a month a weather chart about the highs and lows for the records and the moisture records and what happened last year, and that was just in the paper over the weekend. So I would think if she would want to go on, you know, the Madison newspaper website and look that up, that's always a nice interesting chart. I just want to comment on that quickly. I was just reading March's, and I would think this must be the, maybe the fellas can talk about it. The highest high in March, I think, was 80, and the lowest low in March was 29 below zero. And I was just wondering if that's the, and probably that in November, would that be the months that would have those great extremes and all of a sudden on the radio? Thank you. Goodbye.
All right. Thanks for calling.
That's a great question. I've always been intrigued by that. I'd like to geographically take a map and figure out what's the greatest temperature range at a single station and for what calendar day. So you'd start to get an idea of what seasons are the most extreme in terms of their highs and all-time highs and all-time minimums. I would think about 110 degrees Fahrenheit for a range is awfully close, if not the extreme. But you're right to have a suspicion that the other time that it could happen might be in the month of November or even December. I know in Boston in December, I've had a couple days before Christmas, 74 degrees with cloudy skies. And then on the same day, some years before or after, sometimes it gets down as low as minus 15. So it's another day with a huge period of time with a huge range. So I don't know what it is around here.
Didn't we just set a record temperature in a January maximum?
Because
I wonder if January could do it too. Because I thought it was in the 70s, but maybe it was only in the 60s.
Yeah, I don't think it's ever been in the 70s in January in Madison.
So it wouldn't be quite enough.
That wouldn't be quite enough, but Debbie in Green Bay has something on a website that we might be interested in. Deb, hi.
Hi. There was a lady who called, and she was questioning about some weather history.
Yeah.
Well, I have a website. It's called wonderground.com, WUNDERGROUND, and it just has all... Would you ever want to know about history? I had a weather history. I had to call NCOA to actually get it. And this wonderful young man gave me this website. So it's really interesting. So I just thought I would share that.
Yeah, oh,
it's wonderground.com. And wonder is spelled WUNDER.
WUNDER. Yep. Uh huh.
Oh, I'm going to have to go to that and take a look.
Okay. Yeah, it's really
I think actually, if you search under Weather Underground.
Yeah,
that site will pipe up if you wrote it down wrong. And they don't mean the Weather Underground that we're familiar with in the 60s. They mean there's a weather site called Weather Underground.
Yeah, I go there once in a while myself, actually, to take a look
I usually look at, you know, like cities that I'm traveling to. I go there and look at that. I didn't realize they had historic stuff, though.
Hmm.
Yeah, it's all history. It was the only place that this gentleman suggested. He was, like, from the weather station, and he actually directed me to it. And it really has everything you could think of, Green Bay, a whole bunch of stuff in there. So,
thank you, Deb.
You're welcome.
Appreciate the call. Let's go to Alan in Greendale next. Hi, Alan.
Good morning.
Morning.
There was a lady that called a few minutes ago inquiring about the normal high temperatures and low temperatures in Milwaukee.
Yeah, you know what they are? Not the normal. She wanted to know the highest high and the lowest low, I think.
No, the lowest high.
The lowest high.
Yeah, what's
and
the lowest
low?
Yeah, what's the lowest maximum temperature for the wintertime in some of those cities?
Okay, yeah, because I put together a chart of for each day of the year of the record high and the record low temperatures.
Mm-hmm.
going back to like 1872.
Wow.
Oh,
and, I've even gone far enough that if somebody wants to track global warming, I broke it down into quarter centuries to see how many records were set in any given quarter century.
Mm-hmm. Huh. Did you do a difference between those?
Someone was just talking to us about what's the most extreme difference between high and low in a month, but you have it down to the day. Do you have any sense of that? How many degrees difference between the all-time high and all-time low?
Record low is minus 29. Record high, I believe, is 105.
For what station?
No, for the same day.
For the same day.
No, not for the same day.
Yeah.
Have the individual record high temperatures for any given day and the record low temperatures for any other given day.
And for what station?
That's for Milwaukee.
Okay, so we're going to give you an assignment.
Yeah, I want to know the answer to this.
We want you to calculate the difference between the record high and the record low.
On all those days.
On all those days. And then tell us what the biggest difference is. And then call us back.
Okay.
All right. Well, you can probably, if he's over. Got it in his computer, he could probably
do it.
Yeah,
spreadsheet.
It's like 100-something years. That would be a great testimony to what that range would be.
I'd be happy to share it if somebody, if I can leave my email address, I'd be happy to share it with anybody that would be interested.
Sure, that'd be good.
I'll tell you what.
You can send it to us and we'll post it around.
Yeah.
I'll let Larry figure that out.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you what. We'll put you on hold and we'll get your email address and maybe you guys can
contact them.
Contact back and forth. I'll tell you what. I'll put you on hold, Alan, and Jim Packard will get your address. So stay with us. He's on the phone with another caller right now, but he'll be with you in a minute or two. So. excuse me, just hang in there.
Well, we all like faculty, aren't we? We have an assignment for you.
Another little
I'd love to know that data. That's a great data set he's put together.
Yeah, that's a wonderful data set. That takes a lot of perseverance and time.
You got to like the weather.
You got to like the weather a lot. Well, here's the number for you to join in, by the way. It's 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us at talk@wpr.org. Talking today with Steve Ackerman and John Martin, our weather guys here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Weather on our minds today with Steve Ackerman and John Martin from the University of Wisconsin. Steve directs the Cooperative Institute for Meteorological Satellite Studies, and John is chair of the Department of Atmospheric and Oceanic Sciences. And they've been on this show for... How many years now have you been on this
show? Since 1997.
Yeah. I think it's 12 years.
12 years.
A dozen years.
Now, don't be thinking about how long you've been doing this, Larry.
So a dozen years. You got to keep at it a while before you're going to catch up to me.
A few more years.
A few more. Well, there are so many callers online. Let's just go right to the phones. Alan in Greendale up next.
Oh, he's got the answer.
Hi.
I just talked to you a few minutes
ago. Oh, that's right.
Yeah, he's got the answer, right?
That's right. Oh, and he's been on hold.
Oh, you're still on hold.
He's still on hold. Oh, I tell you what, Alan, I'm sorry. I completely blew that. Jim Packard will take your email, and we'll put you on hold, and he will now get to you. And that's my fault. I thought, gee, that name sounds familiar. But let's go then to Dave in Minocqua. Dave, hello.
Hello. I was just looking at some data from weather.com.
Yeah.
From Minocqua, there's about 90 or 95 years of data here.
Mm.
And the biggest daily changes, are up in the upper 90s, and I found one of 100 degrees.
Yeah, okay. So
what day or time?
It was in March.
It was in March.
Excuse me, February. February 25th, 1976, it was 57 degrees positive, and the coldest day on that same day was minus 43 degrees Fahrenheit, 1928.
Wow.
That's 100 degrees. And there's others with 97 in January, 98 in earlier in February, 99 in March. There's quite a few in the 90s.
Huh.
Yeah,
and so it is January, February, March.
Yeah, clustered after the solstice.
I think it's those years when there's no snow on the ground. Then we get, warm up quite a bit.
Yeah, because
there are times when we don't have snow up here in January.
That's a good theory because I think
in March, too.
You get days where the flow of the atmospheric flow is really high amplitude in the wintertime sometimes, and if you got snow on the ground, that mitigates the effects of that high amplitude flow. But if you don't, you get really warm on those warm days.
Yeah.
That's a good point.
Could I just make another an observation?
Sure.
The last couple of days, the barometer's been up about 30.5, which is pretty high. And I guess Lake Superior is mostly frozen now. So then the air that's coming down from Canada isn't being moderated by the water anymore. And so we're getting colder weather. So yesterday it was, there were quite a few minus 30s up on the Michigan border.
Mm.
Land O'Lakes, Wisconsin, Waters Meet, Michigan, near Trout Lake, near Boulder Junction was minus 31 officially.
Ooh.
Wakefield was minus 30. So with that barometer reading, it's just really been cold up here and not much snow.
Mm.
I was just wondering if you know where I can get a website, a web photo of Lake Superior, you know, satellite view that's decent.
Satellite. Oh, yeah. If you look around on the website, ssec.wisc.edu, so
okay.
WI, and just search on MODIS images. Each day we provide a, you know, a beautiful color composite of the Great Lakes images.
Oh.
And you can see that the ice, you're right, the ice, there's a lot of ice on Lake Superior. I don't think you could walk all the way across it. But,
no.
right? But, yeah, you could see that ice.
Okay.
And you could see, if you do it throughout the year, too, you'll see the changes of the fall leaves and everything. It's really quite a nice sight.
Okay, that was SSEC.
WISC.edu.
And MODIS images?
Yeah, MODIS images.
Thank you.
Or MODIS Great Lake images, and you'll get something pop up.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Boy, minus 30. You wouldn't want to be sticking your tongue to the pump handle or the lamppost when it's get that cold. Oh, my goodness. Dane in Croakville, we'll go to you next. Hi, Dane.
Excuse me. I had a friend. I have been a resident of Illinois most of my life, and a friend of mine in Illinois was a patent engineer for BorgWarner Corporation. When he retired, and then a few years ago, he patented through the U.S. Patent Office a way of making and creating energy out of the barometric air pressure differences between different communities.
Mm-hmm.
It's in www.coldenergy.com. Coldenergy.com. There's an internet site for it, a website for it. But basically, the air pressure difference between Madison, Wisconsin, and Indianapolis, Indiana, is going to always be different. Is that correct?
Just about always. I wouldn't say always, but just about always.
If you build a seamless tube between Madison, Wisconsin, and Indianapolis, Indiana, you would have a supersonic wind in that tunnel always.
Huh.
Just put fans in the tunnel and you generate electricity.
Yeah, or the alternative is taking advantage of the exact same set of circumstances to just put giant windmills up. Because any time there's a pressure difference across a distance, you get a wind. That's exactly what drives the wind.
But enclosing it in the tunnel confines it. It doesn't go around.
It focuses it a little bit, yeah. Yeah.
This patent has never been picked up by anybody, and it's got a website, www.coldenergy.com, with all the details on it.
I wonder if other companies or speculators have said, there's a lot of infrastructure trying to put a little tunnel between Madison and Indianapolis.
You go along right-of-ways of railroads and the highways, no big deal.
Uh-huh.
It can curve, it can turn, it can go up and down. It enclosed the area with a valve on each end.
Mm-hmm.
You open the valve, it's on each end, and you got a supersonic wind in the tunnel almost.
Yeah.
John, I think you have a new investment.
Yeah.
you wonder why that wouldn't work.
Well, I'm not an engineer, but I imagine that it's maybe a balance between putting a big windmill up with a 30-foot wingspan and one in a tube that has a 2 or 3 inch wingspan, and maybe you just don't get the same bang for your buck.
Even though it's moving really fast.
Yeah, it's moving faster, but it's over a smaller rotor, and so maybe you just don't get, there must be a tolerance perhaps for the machine-made pots or something that doesn't make it worth it.
Or something. Yeah.
It's bound to be a cost issue, not a science issue.
Right, yeah.
Because
it
would work.
Because the science makes sense.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah.
It's the cost that may be the perimeter.
Right.
Yeah, thanks, Dane. Appreciate the call. Guy and Merrill, we'll go to you next. Hi, Guy.
Hi, how you doing?
Good.
I'm originally from Northern Hampshire, up by Mount Washington.
That's where my great-grandmother was born, Jefferson.
Really?
Yeah, she's from Jefferson.
Okay, well, I was born in Gorham, New Hampshire, which is not
excellent.
Too far from the base of the mountain.
Right.
I thought somebody on there had a good accent. but my question is, when I grew up, there was always, the highest recorded winds on Mount Washington where I believe they were 230-some-odd miles per hour.
234, yeah.
234 sustained wind. Now, is that is that throughout the world, or is that in North America alone?
No, that's the highest wind speed ever recorded at the surface of the Earth.
Okay, and has that ever come close to it since?
You know, I don't really know the answer to that. That is a good question. There was one, maybe it was a few summers ago, there was a typhoon in the Western Pacific that apparently someone reported a wind, not at the surface, but close to it, that was over 200 miles per hour. And that got the Mount Washington people up in arms. They wanted to make sure that it was done right. And it turns out that they had to come back a little bit from that high wind speed report because there was something wrong with the instrument. It was about 190 miles per hour. So,
okay. What would cause that wind speed up there?
I don't know. I've always wondered about that. It was April 12th, 1934,
yep.
And I think it was 231 miles per hour.
Yeah.
And, I don't really know.
I've been up there numerous times when I was a kid, and you know, you leave the base of the mountain in T-shirt and shorts, and you get up there, and it could be snowing.
Yeah, you know, as you know, people die doing such things up there. I mean, it's a really hostile environment. There must have been something about the Presidential Range and the orography around Mount Washington combined with other circumstances that led to some funneling of winds at about 6,000 feet that may have been the factor that got the wind that high. But they had a 5-minute average that day of 188 miles per hour.
Oh,
right.
That's amazing.
And if I'm not mistaken, too, I think scientists from around the country, around the world, go to Mount Washington and study, instead of going up to Antarctica, they'll go above treeline and study the tundra, because it simulates the tundra and, you know, the flowers and, you know, the things that survive up there.
Yeah.
They go up there and study that, and it gets them kind of an idea of what it's like up in the tundra.
Yeah, it's an amazing place. They do a lot of cloud microphysical experiments up there as well, trying to understand what the small particles and clouds are all about.
Thank you very much for calling. I appreciate the call. And as long as we're out there on the East Coast, we've got an email here from Kayla who says, I've been having this debate with my roommates about the winter weather in New York City compared to Madison. Is it correct that New York City is slightly warmer during the winter due to being close to the ocean?
Yeah.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that.
Yeah, slightly
in
might be too
way.
Weak.
Yeah, maybe slightly is a little weird. Yeah, that Gulf Stream that flows up on the on that region of the coastline there, the East Coast, really tends to moderate the weathers in New York City, Long Island, and even Boston, I guess, the whole East Coast.
Yeah. It also gives them the opportunity for big snow events, which we don't get so often here, Milwaukee aside.
And last year aside.
Yeah, right. Well, I mean giant 12 and 15-inch snowfalls. Right, they're not that uncommon in the East, Northeast United States. They're certainly more uncommon here.
Right, that's true.
Well, here's one more. Paraphrasing George Carlin, Bill starts out by saying, this is the hippy-dippy weatherman forecasting for your needs. The temperature here at the airport is 32 degrees, which is stupid because nobody lives here. But then says, that was a George Carlin little routine. Well, my house is up on the hill above Warner Park in Madison, and even more above the Madison Airport, less than a mile from my house. I have a minimum maximum thermometer. I placed it two nights ago out the back door, well away from the house. The minimum at my house was 16 degrees. The official Milwaukee Sullivan low for Madison yesterday was 5 degrees.
Yeah.
That's 11 degrees difference. I realize that heat travels upwards fast at low points like the airport when the night air is still, but would it not be reasonable to let people know what the temperatures they experience will be? This could be relevant if there's a possibility that puddles or a driveway or plants might freeze overnight, for instance.
And it's a very good point. The Madison Airport is notorious for being a little bit colder than everyone else, sometimes drastically colder than everybody else, but it's the official climate site for the lakes area. And that might not be such a bad idea because it's far away from the lakes, it's at a low elevation, and that gives a fairly decent reading of what's going on around here, although it tends to be on the cold side on clear, still winter nights.
Tom in Wyawega, on to you now. Hi, Tom.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Say, I just thought, you know, I'd offer this for a point of interest. I was reading a book on Benjamin Franklin, and he comes to the conclusion that storms track to the northeast up the East Coast, and that the cause is because of heated air in the Gulf of Mexico. And he goes on to explain a lot of things, and he's got some pretty sophisticated mechanics for the atmosphere described in the 1700s. So if you'd ever want to look that up in his personal writings, it's pretty interesting readings, and I think it's probably the first description of a Cape Hatteras storm track.
Hmm. Yeah, Franklin knew. He also knew something about the Gulf Stream. So Franklin was on top of a lot of things, and part of this understanding of weather systems and how they track and the circulation around them came from his voluminous correspondence while in Philadelphia with the members of his family in Boston with whom he still spoke. He was estranged from some of them, but they had people wrote letters every other day in that time, and then you put them together if you're curious, and you realize that the weather that's happening in Philly on a Wednesday was happening in Boston on Thursday, and he learned a lot about that. Yeah, he was a very smart guy.
Yeah, I was surprised to see that. Well, thank you.
All right, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. My wife's grandmother lived to be about 90, I forget what it was, in her 90s, but she kept a daily record, a diary, every day from the time she was a little girl until she died.
Wow.
And the books would, fill a pretty good size room, but she kept the temperatures, the high and the low.
Oh, really?
She put in every single day. She put those in.
Franklin was really, really smart, and a lot of the things that he developed was through observations that either he made or he made in coupling with other people, and then had the curiosity to try and figure out, how do you explain these observations?
Yeah, what do they mean?
Yeah.
And if you also wanted to know how the Chicago Cubs were doing, she kept a close record of that.
Very interesting. Tale of woe, unfortunately.
Oh, boy. Pat in Green Bay, we turn to you now. Hi, Pat.
Yeah, hi, Larry. Hi, Steve and John.
Hi, Pat.
I had two things, but last Thursday, we had a pretty good snowstorm.
Yeah.
And we had pronounced thunder and lightning, and I'm about 2 miles north of downtown Green Bay, north and slightly west. And the local weather people said this would increase or you could expect more snowfall as a result of this phenomena.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, this event, when you have snowfall and thunder, is what we call very, very creatively thunder snow. And it's convection in there. So convection can increase.
Yeah, I saw the lightning.
You did? Oh, yeah, okay.
Oh, it's bright.
Oh, it's dramatic. I think it's really bright, don't you, Pat? When it's snowing heavily and then there's lightning, it just kind of illuminates crystals or something.
It came through my blinds and I'm saying, whoa.
Yeah, it's amazing. But Steve's right. The very same way that, when you have a sort of a steady drizzle or a steady light rain in the summertime that gets punctuated by a thunderstorm and the rain comes down more heavily, same thing in the wintertime. It's just not as common that you get a thunderstorm with snow. But when it happens, you get the same result.
Well, I thought it was really rare. I've never seen that before. There's a lot of snow and dense. The other thing was you talked about snowflakes a long time ago. And about the biggest one, I think there was something about 12 inches or something.
Yeah, like the size of a plate. Something
wow.
Like
yeah, no. Unbelievable.
But this has bugged me for a long time, okay? Because doesn't, a basic snowflake just, is less than a quarter inch and like two-dimensional and the six thing, isn't that just the snowflake?
Technically a snowflake is an aggregation of ice crystals.
Yeah.
So usually when you start even talking something about the size of a quarter, they're usually things that have collided together and stuck together. And that's how you get them that big. Yeah, generally the snow crystals themselves are generally pretty small.
I mean, just the one, if I say I have a snowflake, I mean, it's just that tiny little critter.
That's what I would call if I was being careful, an individual ice crystal.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. They get pretty good. I mean, you could see some of them sometimes when it's just snowing really lightly, and they fall on your jacket or on your windshield, and they're beautiful shapes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Thanks, Pat.
Well, thanks for the follow-up.
Yeah, appreciate it very much. Cindy in Menominee, on to you now. Hi, Cindy.
Hi. I was just wondering if you had heard about solar balloons. I found out about them recently on a website called Cities Go Green on page 13 of their newest issue. And they're 8-foot diameter balloons that form a parabola with the aluminum at the bottom, connecting with bringing the sun in and collecting it at a solar voltaic cell in the center. And they're, I guess, create one kilowatt of energy for each balloon. So two could power a house, and they're thinking 150 square mile area could possibly power the whole U.S. I just wondered, that of course would be completely dependent on a healthy atmosphere and a clear enough atmosphere so that we were receiving the sun's rays. I just wondered if you have any trends, know of any trends about the Earth's atmosphere and the amount of sunlight coming through.
Yeah, that's a good question. Yeah, the main things that are going to affect the sunlight on any particular day are going to be whether or not it's cloudy or clear. And there's a lot of studies looking at trends in total cloudiness globally. And it doesn't seem to be changing all that much, the total amount. Yeah. Aerosol amounts or pollutions and things like that are very more episodic. So we've had rules and regulations that are trying to keep major air pollution events from occurring, but there are still events that, break out and cause a problem.
Yeah, there may be certain localities, cities that have had a trend in reduction of visibility or something over the years, but yeah.
Yeah.
And that testifies to the regionality of it.
So not globally.
Probably not.
Yeah, that's
not
that's
that
a
regard.
Tougher issue to actually measure that, because when you get when you think about an air pollution event around here, they're easy to measure on the ground, but to measure them over oceans and things like that, you need to do that from usually a satellite platform, and the signal gets a little bit smaller and harder to tease out.
But you probably don't want to use solar balloons in Beijing, from all we heard about in the summertime.
Yeah, right.
Because they don't get sunshine there.
No. How about Nevada?
Right. Well, I kept thinking that, are they calling it a balloon because they can raise it the surface and get it above the air pollution layer?
They're going to suspend it at between 10 and 20 feet, I believe, but I could be a little wrong on the exact amount. But something like that on poles. They're very inexpensive to make, generally. They can be replaced in 15 minutes by a trained person. There are a whole bunch of things that are fitting, it seems, so I'm really hopeful about them. But you can all check them out if you don't know.
Yeah, we'll take a look at that. Because it sounds like they're trying to get it out of the boundary layer.
Yeah.
Thank you very much for calling. Well, we got an email from Gary, who has been online and looking for the biggest temperature difference in one day.
Oh yeah,
in the world on record, and
let's have John guess.
Yeah, we have to make a guess. Right. We have to make a guess. Let's see. Can you tell me when it was? What day or what season?
It would have been January 23rd.
Okay, January 23rd. Oh,
in the United States.
I'm going to guess it's somewhere in Colorado or Montana, something like that, or the Dakotas.
I was going to guess Dakotas.
Yeah. Oh, man. Well, I tell you what, I had given you the wrong day, but you got it's Loma, Montana.
Wow.
January 15th, 1972, the temperature rose exactly 103 degrees from minus 54 degrees Fahrenheit to plus 49. This is the world record for a 24-hour.
Oh, so it's one 24-hour.
Oh,
it's not even
hours.
Man, holy mackerel.
That's astounding.
And here is, and this is within 24 hours.
Wow.
Browning, Montana, January 23rd, 1916, it went from 44 degrees to minus 56.
Wow.
And Fairfield, Montana, December 24th, 1924, it went from 63 degrees to minus 21. Then we got Rapid City, South Dakota, 1911, from 49 degrees to minus 13. And Spearfish, South Dakota, from 54 degrees to minus 4 degrees. So that's a little less.
In 2 minutes.
Yeah.
That was in 2 minutes.
Or 5 minutes. And there was a 2 minute temperature rise of 50 degrees that preceded that.
It was 9 a.m. to minus 4. It was 54 degrees at 9 a.m. to minus 4 at 9:27 minutes.
And it raised to 94 from about minus 3 or something on that same morning. That's wild.
Holy mackerel.
Yeah, and the Rapid City, South Dakota went from, in 1911, at 7 a.m. it was 55 degrees, and at 8 it was 55 degrees at 7 a.m., and it was at 7:15, it was 8 degrees.
Wow.
So it went from 57 degrees to 8 degrees.
And what to wear. What to wear weather.
I mean, I'd get frozen on my way to the mailbox.
I know. Amazing.
Oh, man. Well, that was a lot of fun. Thanks, guys.
Yeah, thank you.
This is fun.
Well, you'll be back this month.
We'll be back month at the end of the month.
Yeah, last Monday of the month. Look forward to it very much. Steve Ackerman and John Martin. Steve, director of the Cooperative Institute for Meteorological Satellite Studies. John Martin, chair of the Department of Atmospheric and Oceanic Sciences at the UW. So really pleased to have them with us today. Tomorrow we'll take a conversation with Scott Craven. Stay with us. Lots in store.